Blog Talk Radio.
...of KJMA's practice of constructive community reporting, we have invited Dr. Khalid Mohammed, Minister and Supreme Captain of Minister Louis Farrakhan and the elite fruit of Islam, to help us to put today's events into perspective. Dr. Mohammed.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan teach us that no matter how bad the condition looks that the black man and black woman is in, no matter how much self-destruction, no matter how much destructive behavior and conduct we see on the part of the black man and black woman, no matter how low the black man and black woman has fallen, the black man is the original man, God's people.
Could you help us to understand the kind of forces that create a Frank Williams?
When we look at a Roberta, a Frank Williams, and the many Frank Williams across the nation of America and the black nation in general, when we look at a Frank Williams, we see one who is other than self. And when we see him doing evil, we see him doing evil which is learned behavior, learned and picked up from the very devil himself over the past 400 years. I guess, Roberta, we could say the devil made him do it.
Black power, and more black power to my people. This is your brother, soldier in arms, comrade in battle, Sean Saddam Kweli. I'm happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hills and smells of North America. As always, this is a privilege. This is a joy. This is an esteemed honor to be able to talk to you, my sisters, my brothers, and some others from this bold revolutionary radio broadcast, Black Power Radio. And as we do every Monday night, we come to you kicking not only the statistics, but kicking the ballistics. And I want to welcome you out if it's your first time listening to our broadcast, if it's your second time, if it's, you know, your third time, or if you're a long-time listener and supporter of ours, we certainly appreciate you. On behalf of our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga, and our national central committee and staff, and now we, as always, have to come to you with a power-packed presentation. We never waste your time, as we're always happy to come to you over these airwaves every Monday night. We're live. This is not a pre-recorded broadcast. This is a live broadcast, live, every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, right here in the hells and smells of North America. I have to open up this show giving thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers who answers to many different names. And we bear witness that regardless to land, regardless to label, regardless to language, there is but one God. And we give thanks to that one God for doing what was prophesied, which was to seek and to save us who were lost, the black man and black woman, here in the hills and smells of North America. And as we comb the scriptures, we can find no other people, and scriptures regardless to where it comes from, we can find no other people who fit the description of the lost brother, the lost sister, that lost sheep, better than we, the 40 to 50 million black men and women here in the hills of North America. We thank that one God for coming amongst us and raising up many different men and women, warriors and freedom fighters, and many different soldiers who have come to fight the battle. And, of course, we have to give praise and thanks for all of the great ancestors, our great ancestors, and our greats who have fought for our independence, first our declaration and sovereignty as a nation, our independence as we had fallen into the hands of a captive slave trader. And the slave traders had got amongst our own people and tried to use our people, or did use our people against us, to send us through the door of no return. And so we went through the door of no return, we put on the slave boats. And that great people that come from different parts of Africa had to come over here and build up an empire where we did not see the benefits of that labor. We know this story, and I'm not going to go all the way into it. But suffice to say, we're thankful for the greats like Queen Nzinga and Queen of Shetset, and we're thankful for the greats like Bukman and Dessalines. We're thankful for all of the many names who have come amongst our people. And if we live to make the ripe old age of Methuselah, which was 969 years of age, we would never be able to thank the Creator enough for a bold, bald-headed black man, who we call 100% black man. He's unrelenting, he's unflinching, he's unyielding with our enemies, who told us that his purpose was to give and is to give our enemies hell from the cradle to the grave. And now he organized amongst us for many years with many different formations. We first had heard about him. Some of you heard about him down there in New Orleans, all through Dillard College and all through his academic studies of religion, religious studies. Others of you had known him and come to know him as a worker in the Nation of Islam, as Supreme Captain and National Assistant and Regional Minister and this, that, and the third. I mean, all the titles that you could think of that the black man did and fulfilled. Others of you knew him from 1997 on in to when he made a spiritual transition in 2001 as the National Chairman of the New Black Panther Party. But however you got to know the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad, we're thankful that you learned of this black man and understood what he means and what he meant to our people. And so I say for him, and I say for that startup in Dallas, Texas, underneath for the Aaron Michaels. And we thank them for helping to keep the Panther tradition alive and to keep it thriving and surviving. And so we have to give thanks for them, and we give thanks for our big brother who will hopefully join us tonight, scheduled to join us tonight, the attorney at war, the warrior lawyer, the attorney general, our chairman emeritus, who completed his term as chairman, not his term as a freedom fighter, not his term as a warrior, not his term as a soldier, but just his term as national chairman just a few months back, and he is organizing on the legal end in an international ministry of justice for our people to help us to get free from that perspective, because we are being lynched in the courts. We are being legally lynched in the courts and drugged through the mud, where they don't hang us necessarily on the trees anymore. They do in some parts, but very rarely. You're being hung now in through the judicial system, through the court system, through paperwork, through documentation. And so we have a brother who's on the inside who is able to fight and to keep the fight alive that Minister Malcolm X envisioned from the attorneys, and that the greats, like you see from the great attorney and now Mayor Chokwe Lumumba and Alton Maddox and so many others, and Johnny Cochran, who pushed forward, talking about Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And we give thanks for our national chairman today, who has carried on chairmanship and been a most worthy student and a most worthy stalwart to carry it on, as he was a brother who played the background for a lot of his career, a lot of his revolutionary early career. He played the background because he was not a man who wanted to be seen, and he was not somebody who wanted to be seen of men and make a big fuss of himself. But he, like those disciples that you read about in the Bible and that you read about in the Quran, that you read about with the enlightened ones, he was one who was there to do what was necessary. And he did what was necessary, serving as the Black Power General's national assistant and later national chief of staff, and then serving as Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, national chief of staff, and now he is our national chairman, on the move, on a mission, and doing what he got to do, talking about the professor, the great organizer, the great Pan-African warrior, will be joining us in just a few moments, Minister Hashim Nzinga. I'm talking about his Black Power Radio, and I know that was a long introduction, but I had to get that to you. And we're organized tonight. Tonight is a special night. It is a night where we celebrate, where the world is celebrating a black man who gave his life and who organized for peace amongst the people, talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He has organized and continued to fight. He continued to fight in a way, in the best way that he knew how to continue to fight. And he was a man who believed in peace and believed could exist in a peaceful state here in America. And so tonight we have a bunch of special guests who will be joining on with us. We have from in the first hour, we have the president of the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, that great organization of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We have Dr. and the Honorable Charles Steele, who will be joining us. He's coming in from Germany. He'll be talking to us from Germany, all the way over there, talking to us about that great warrior, talking to us about that great legacy, talking to us about how we can continue to struggle today for peace, whether you agree with the nonviolent method or not. We do agree that we need some peace, and we do agree that we need some contentment and some freedom. So the Honorable Charles Steele will be on with us tonight. We'll have also on with us from the great, great organization called the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. We will have our brother Akinyele Yemoja on. He is the chair and head out in Georgia State, right there in Georgia State, and he is the chair and head lead officer, the lead officer for the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. He'll be on with us as well. And, of course, we'll hear from, I told you, the attorney at war, the attorney general, the five-star general, president of Black Lawyers for Justice, new Black Panther, middle former national chairman, former head of Unity Nation, that great spiritual firebrand. I mean, there's a lot of titles that you can give him. I always know him as my brother, mentor, comrade, friend, a lot of things. Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, who will be on with us. So I'm talking about you. It can't get any better tonight on Black Power Radio. I mean, just that alone is worth the price of admission, and you don't even have to pay a thing. All you got to do is just stand by and listen. And so I think that at this point, our national chairman should be ready, and I will go ahead and bring him on because we got to move quick. Here it is, our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga. Welcome to the broadcast, sir, Black Power.
Black Power. How are you, Brother Sean?
Doing fine, sir. Doing fine. How are you, Brother Chairman?
Well, once again, we are excited to hear your voice, brother, because we know every time we hear that voice, and it's Monday between 8 and 10, black people finna receive a valuable lesson. And that's what the Honorable Dr. Khaled Muhammad set this up for, and that's what our great attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz planned and set this up for, that we, so many years in the original Panther Party and Deacons for Defense and SCLC, NAACP, CORE, and so many of our groups depended on white radio, white media to tell our story. And God blessed us out of all of those great inventors and all of those great black people invented transmitters and filaments and light bulbs and the way we can talk on phones and radios. Finally, we got a vice where we can be anywhere in the world right now, from Johannesburg, South Africa, to Cuba, to Colombia, to Jamaica, to Midland, Texas, to Kentucky, anywhere we want to be, we could be heard. And tonight, we're going to use this wonderful tool to do something for an extraordinary human being that God passed our way. And we're going to do it nice, respectful, and we're going to do what Dr. John Henry Clark told us to do and Dr. Amos Wilson and so many of our great scholars. We're going to take our time and we're going to do some scholarly work tonight, and we're going to take an in-depth look at the life of this great man that they call Martin Luther King Jr., and one of the black people who got a real doctorate and went to school and got a real doctorate. It wasn't now one of those, we'll give you a doctorate if you come and speak at our college. This young man was brilliant at a young age, as we all know. And we're just going to have to look at this tonight, Sean, and no sensationalism, no bells and whistles. We're going to have to just analyze and take an in-depth look at one of the greatest black leaders of our time, and ask the question, what happened to this young, fiery man at 39 years old on that balcony when he walked out of room 306 in Memphis, Tennessee? Why did it happen? We can go back and say when Imhotep died. We can say when Queen Nefertiti died. We can go back and dig bones and give you ancient dates. We can tell you when the Messiah Jesus was crucified. And with the technology we got now, we can try to find out a question that Dr. King would want us to find out if he was still living. We know he went to the mountaintop, and we know he had a dream, and we know also that he was a man that had children and a family, and he wanted to feed his family and be there for his kids, and he's not there. And we want to ask the question tonight, why? And like the Kennedy family, we're going to look deeper than just Dr. King, Sean. We got to ask some serious questions, and we got to get our Black Power listening audience to get them a pen, a paper, pull up your internet. You might have to do some Googling and some research. You know, we had the great ones to come along and tell us. Steve Coakley talked about this forever. Dick Gregory talked about it forever. But nobody wanted to really, really, really pin down who killed Dr. Martin Luther King. And while we celebrating every year, we owe it to our fallen warrior, soldier, minister to dig deep and to keep this question on the drawing board. Like our enemies would not let you take one of their great ones and just ride off into the sunset with no answers. You know, so Sean, let's ask a couple of questions first before we start getting our guests on, to get the Black Talk listening radio audience mind to thinking. First of all, I woke up this morning on this King's holiday and read the Atlanta paper, and College Park, a shooting had happened. A 22-year-old black man was dead at Grady Hospital, and three black men were taken into custody. And it just told me right off the bat, if King was here, he would want the new Black Panther Party and every black man with a voice to put our voices and our boots and our jackets and our hats on and hit these streets and stop this black-on-black violence. Let me get that on the table first. If we're going to talk about Dr. King and we're going to talk about nonviolence and that type of talk, we have to start a movement of nonviolence in our own community among ourselves. King would be on the front line of that right now. These newspapers are not even shocking no more, and our young people are dying. We have to put some Dr. King action on these streets, and I'm saying that to the new Black Panther Party who's listening. But let's look at this, Sean. Let's get some notepads and some pens, and let's ask some questions before our guests come on. Let's just drift back into time, and let's remember a man named Papa King. And I'm going to send you something to post on your Facebook. In Papa King's office, he had a big black panther on his desk. Anybody went in his office, they had to look at that black panther. And in the 60s and 70s, everybody knew what that meant. So I don't think it was a coincidence that Papa King was a revolutionary. And a lot of people don't know that Papa King, which they call Daddy King, did the first big march in Atlanta was in 1935. Papa King led it. He had a tremendous history. He was very rebellious, and he was a revolutionary preacher. And he was, of course, the preacher of Ebenezer Baptist Church, which his son eventually became the preacher of. But let's look at this King family from a different point of view. First of all, I heard his daughter this morning at the King Ebenezer Baptist Church. Every year in Atlanta, they do a big deal with Dr. King, and they have governors, and they have mayors, and they have presidents and vice presidents and presidents of other countries there. But I was really impressed that his daughter, only living daughter now, she got to that mic, and she knew Governor Dales was sitting behind her, and she brought up our brother Kenneth Johnson, KJ. And she said, "We can't forget KJ." That's something her daddy would have said, because, as you know, in the state of Georgia, they're begging the governor to open this case about this young brother who was found in this gym in this mat. And the governor of Georgia is one of the few people who could open up this case, and Governor Dales was behind her going to speak next, and she told him, "My daddy will be talking about KJ this morning." So I applaud her for her strength. And we'll go on. We'll leave that alone for now. We got so much to cover. But, brother, you know, we got to think of something. In July 20th, 1969, 15 months after Dr. King was assassinated, a call was made, and they found A.D., which real name was Alfred Daniel King, Dr. King's young brother, was floating in his swimming pool. And if you look in the history of July 20, 1969, that day they had Armstrong walking on the moon. But everybody is wondering, why was Dr. King's brother found floating in his swimming pool, dead in his drawers? And a lot of people don't know this, but when they did some research, and Papa King was once said that A.D. was his most rebellious son. And as a young brother, Dr. King, A.D. was with him there in Memphis when he was assassinated. And A.D. was never, ever the same after his brother was assassinated. And he said several times to his wife and to his children, he's going to find out who killed his brother. But for some reason, you know, this man was found dead, and everybody want to act like he committed suicide. But I bear to differ. I bear to differ. And they don't know A.D.'s history. A.D. in 1961 moved to the state UN, Brother Sean, Kentucky. And he became, no. Let's get it straight here. In 1961, A.D. was a pastor of First Baptist Church of England. It was in Birmingham, Alabama. He was a minister. Of course, we know Dr. King went to Montgomery and was over Dexter Baptist Church. But his brother A.D. was down the road in Birmingham, and he was the minister over a church. That was in 1961. But then in May 11th, 1963, in Birmingham, A.D. house was bombed. So that means A.D. was out there like his brother out there in Birmingham on the streets. And after his house was bombed in 63, he moved to Kentucky. That's what I meant to say, where you are, Brother Sean. And A.D. became a pastor of a Zion Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky. And he started the Kentucky Christian Leadership Conference. Sound familiar? Because his brother in Montgomery started the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But A.D. went to Kentucky and started the Kentucky Christian Leadership Conference. And A.D., was known to be an excellent swimmer. And his wife said when they pulled his body out, there was no water in his lungs. And Brother Sean, when there's no water in your lungs, that means you didn't drown. And they say his body was in fetus position, which gives the indication that his body was locked into position when he was threw into the water. And he had bruises on his forehead, but there was a ring around his neck, like he had been lynched and carried to the pool and thrown in the water. Now, so Dr. King assassination is still being looked at, but I'm trying to tell you there's other kings that the books need to be open on also. And as you know, we had another king that died in a swimming pool who was an excellent swimmer out in Hollywood, California, Rodney King, after he got started with the Trayvon Martin death, and Rodney King, who we hadn't heard from since the big ordeal in L.A., Rodney King started to resurface and started to do editorials and started to get on magazines and started to talk about Trayvon Martin killer. And all of a sudden, Rodney King was found dead in his swimming pool. So let's just put some stuff on the table here. Now, along with that, let's look at what happened in June 30th, 1974. A 23-year-old black man named Marcus Wayne Chestnut from Ohio walked into Ebenezer Baptist Church and shot and killed Dr. King's mother. But he said he was intending to kill his father, but his mother was closer. And he also, let's always, like when we talk about Fred Hampton, we talk about Mark Clark, let's also mention a 69-year-old brother, a deacon named Edward Borkins, who was also killed with Dr. King's mother. So Dr. King's mother, June 30, 1974, was shot by a black man named Marcus Wayne Chestnut, who was from Ohio, who said that he was meaning to kill Papa King. Now, this man went to jail, and they pleaded insanity, that he was crazy. But this man went into that church, sit on the front row, pulled out two pistols, and opened fire on Papa King and Mama King, pleaded insanity, and died in 1995 in a prison here in Georgia. Now, the reason that bothers me, because as we talk about Dr. King tonight, we know the first attempt on Dr. King's life was not the assassination. We know Dr. King in Harlem, New York, by a black woman, and they said she was crazy. Now, what's funny about that to me is when you talk about Dr. King being stabbed by this black woman, let me see. I had a note to say the year, because I like to give, you know me, I like to get these dates and these times. They're very important to our listeners and our people who are researchers. So a check and balance here. In September 20th, 1958, a 42-year-old black woman from Georgia named Alonzo Ware Carey asked Dr. King his name. And he told the woman his name, and she told him, "I've been looking for you for 5 years," and stabbed him in his heart. Now, what deranged woman going to ask you your name and say, "I've been looking for you 5 years," and stab you in your heart?
Mm.
They always, and she was black. Dr. King's mother assassin, black. He comes all the way from Ohio, but he's crazy, but he gets to Georgia. And he has the mindset to tell the authorities he was trying to kill Dr. King. But they can't put him as crazy, put him away from everybody. And he died in prison in 1994. And this sister left Georgia to follow Dr. King all the way to New York, stab him in his heart, and say she'd been looking for him for 5 years. Why are you even going to use language like that, you understand? Well, my position is this, in the listening audience, if you got your computer in front of you, we did a lot of research online today, but we've been studying this for years, but a lot of stuff's going to come out tonight. But I would say go on your Google and put in who killed Dr. Martin Luther King. And when you push in who killed Dr. Martin Luther King, you'll see a whole bunch of information come up. But one of the things click on is a story that says how the government killed Martin Luther King Jr. by Carl Gibson. Because in 1999, there was a jury in Memphis, Tennessee, that found local, state, and federal government agencies guilty of a conspiracy to assassinate Dr. King. And I wonder to this day why the media didn't blast that all over the place. But it's on Google. Michael Moore, a lot of people covered it, but it's been kept from most of us. So Google who killed Dr. Martin Luther King, and then you click on a piece called How the Government Killed Martin Luther King Jr. by Carl Gibson. And then some of us want to say the government ain't killed Dr. King. The government, well, okay. But we know, let's just talk about why do government get involved in assassinations in the past and who the government is most likely to assassinate in the past. And let's talk about this from a point of view that in 1971, Dr. King received a Grammy. Of course, he was dead. He made his transition in 1968. We all know that. But in 1971, he received a Grammy for an album, which he did a speech, Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam. Now, that album was made April 30th, 1967, at Riverside Church in New York City. And you got to know already that the United States Police Department, Sheriff Departments, and governmental agencies had arrested Dr. King over 30 times in his career. And you got to remember, King was in 1963, became the first African-American to become the Man of the Year on the Time magazine. Everybody know King winning the Nobel Peace Prizes. Everybody know how powerful Dr. King was getting. But one of the things that irritated the United States is one of our guests just said he'll be ready at 9. That's great. Okay, I'm sorry, Brother Sam. We're going to keep going. I hope everybody is taking notes because we're finna get down to the bottom of this in this 2 hours. King won a Grammy, brother, on Why I Oppose the Vietnam War. Now, what nation gives a man a Grammy, which is the highest award with albums and records and whatever you want to call, for opposing a war in the United States? It's like anti-government. But even the Grammy, who don't even give black people Grammys that I knew of until the 80s, but in 71, King won a Grammy. So it would tell our audience to go on Google and listen to that Grammy Award album, Why I Oppose the Vietnam War. Now, at that time, Johnson was carrying out the Vietnam War that Nixon carried on and Kennedy had tried to stay away from. But we all know that Dr. King in 1968 went to Memphis just for a minute to deal with the situation with our brothers that was out there working for the sanitation department. But his real mission was what, Brother Sean? The Poor People's Campaign. He said he had went in 1963 and had a dream. Shortly after that, he told the world that America had gave him a check and it came back insufficient funds, and all the money that they told King they was going to use to improve black neighborhoods, black education, black health care, went to Vietnam, and all the black boys went to Vietnam with the money, and that's why he started opposing the Vietnam War. Then on top of that, he came right back and said he coming back to Washington to do a poor people's campaign, and he wasn't coming to do a speech, and he wasn't getting white help. He was coming to build tents all over the White House lawn and the Capitol lawn, and he wasn't leaving till he get this check cast. So really, Dr. King was the first one to do what they call Occupy Wall Street. The white people call that Occupy Wall Street later, but Dr. King had put that together in 1967. And he said he had threatened to shut down Washington, D.C., and with him threatening to shut down Washington, D.C., and opposing the Vietnam War, corporations were gone crazy because corporations are interested in war because corporations profit from war, so millions of dollars was going to be lost. And this is why Dr. King became a threat to this system. And it's a shame that we're going to come to the conclusion that, and it's no, and I hear somebody say, well, why you say the FBI? Well, we know at that time, J. Edgar Hoover, publicly went out and announced to the world that Dr. King was the most dangerous man in America. Now, if the chief commander of your FBI, your Federal Bureau of Investigation, says that this man who's preaching little white girls and little white boys and little black girls holding hand and nonviolence and peaceful demonstrations, and say he's the most violent, and then this same J. Edgar Hoover, on record, went to President Kennedy and got permission to send a tape to Dr. King's wife, but first sent a tape to Dr. King saying, I got a tape that I'm going to send your wife. And he got permission from the President of the United States to send it, you understand, and was told to kill himself. The FBI director told Dr. King, you know what to do, which everybody who pull those FBI files know he was telling King to commit suicide. Now, you got the FBI director telling a prominent black preacher in the United States that he's the most dangerous man in America, then sending him mail to his house telling him to commit suicide, and we far-fetched to think the FBI had something to do with his assassination or the government. Come on, give me a break. And so we know Dr. King moved on to help the sanitation workers. And we know something happened the first time on the march. For the first time, one of his marches went awry, and people have found proof that Memphis mayor and others worked with some young people to start trouble in the back of the march, and they didn't get to finish the march, and Dr. King had to go back to the march. Let's look at some things that happened, and then we're going to bring on our first guest in a few seconds, and later in the program, we're going to have the CEO and the president of Dr. King's organization now, Brother Charles Steele, going to join us from Germany. He's out of the country, but he's going to join us from Germany because he's over there teaching tonight at one of the churches in Germany where King taught 50 years ago. And then we're going to bring on our Black Power ambassador that has a history with Dr. King personally as a revolutionary, our Black Power ambassador, Makasa Rick. We're going to have several more guests on and professors to discuss this topic. But I'm going to move through a couple of things quickly, just some things to make you think openly. And let's look at some of these things. Number one, Brother Sean, when King went back into Memphis, a lot of us know this history. He was going to stay at a white hotel. He got a call the day before telling them, why are you going to stay in a white hotel? Black people ain't going to like that. But he was saying he was going to stay in a white hotel to show the moves he had made in the civil rights movement for integration. And that's what he was about. We can't lie on his phone. They did sit-ins, and they did all kind of marching that we could stay in hotels and eat at lunch counters. So he was going to stay at a white hotel just to prove a point. But instead, somebody told him to stay in the Lorraine, which we know has a balcony and on. But some of the things that came up in this 1999 civil trial that came out that was real strong was about this Memphis police chief, Frank Holloman, H-O-L-L-O-M-A-N, who plays a big part in the assassination from all the files. He was the chief of police in Memphis and the fire marshal. He had hold both of them posts. But as we know, there was a guy named Lloyd Jowers, J-O-W-E-R-S, of Memphis, who was a police in Memphis in 1940. And as everybody know history, later he would do interviews with Dr. King's son, Dexter. Dexter got his name because of King being a preacher. His first church was Dexter Baptist Church in Montgomery. And Andrew Young did tape recordings. And Lloyd became a big person in this 1999 trial, and he had tapes, and he would start to indicate exactly what happened in Memphis that day. He would bring up that he had a meeting with a McCullens, a Morrow McCullens, and a Earl Clark, both Memphis Police Department marksmen, which means snipers, and two unknown men that he assumed representatives from the federal government, from federal agencies. He had a meeting with these four men in Memphis, and he let everybody know that King, while he was in Memphis, was under the eye-to-eye. Eye-to-eye means that ain't no bugs in your hotel room. That ain't no tape recorder. That means federal agents are watching every move you make. He was under federal surveillance, eye-to-eye. And the United States Army, the 111th Military Intelligence Group, was based out of Fort McPherson here in Atlanta, Georgia, which had just got closed down or it might be still open. But the group from 111th Military Intelligence Group, based out of Fort McPherson here in Atlanta, Georgia, was put on Dr. King not to protect him, but to watch him because what? He had became an anti-war person, one of the leaders in the anti-war situation. So when you Google all this stuff, it's going to shock you that's in black and white. And then, as we know, they set up James Earl Ray, an escaped convict, who we all know the story. He met a Mexican man named Rahul, who told him to buy a certain gun and stay at a certain hotel, and they gave him money, and he's in the Mustang, and he has this gun. But what people got to see clearly is when they got James Ray gun, rifle, the rifle had been shot, but the scope has not been sighted. Sighted means every marksman know there are certain little dials on your scope, and you set it, and as a sniper, it had to be set a certain way. And when they checked the sight was still brand new, which means out of the box, never been set. He said if he would have shot that rifle, he would have been off to the left from hitting Dr. King by a foot or two. Then they found a taxi cab driver who went on record named James McCrew. McCrew told them, Williams humbly told everybody over and over again that he was told to get the rifle, the real rifle that shot Dr. King, and he threw it off a bridge in Memphis on the way to Arkansas, the Memphis-Arkansas bridge, to be correct. Now, the way this whole conspiracy plays out is Dr. King, at that time, we all heard the recording where Dr. King is on his plane, and they saying, we can't take off because we got Dr. King on board, and the plane has been searched all night and guarded all night because of bomb threats. So they know the man is traveling under bomb threat and assassination threats. So the man's supposed to have the best security detail in the world. But all of a sudden when he gets to Memphis, systematically different key people was removed from his security detail. All of this is documented. King, the first people were moved from his security detail was let's just talk about the fire station first. There was a fire station right behind the Lorraine Hotel that could look at Dr. King's room right there at 306. And all of a sudden, a black firefighter named Floyd Newsom, who was at King's last speech, "I've been to the mountaintop," and Newton was called and told that he was going to be removed from his post at that particular fire station. He would be transferred to fire station, I think, number 39, but the fire station number 2 was right across the street from the Lorraine Hotel. And Newton was a very, very serious civil rights activist. Like I say, he was at the speech that King did the night before, so he was going to be one of those people who was paying close attention over there to the Lorraine Hotel, because it had already been made public in the paper that Dr. King was at the Lorraine Hotel in room 306, which they said he never told his hotel room, but all of a sudden it was in the Memphis paper. So he was ordered off the detail by, remember the earlier name we said, Frank Holland, H-O-L-L-O-M-A-N, ordered the two black people worked for the fire department. He relocated one of them and sent one of them home for the day. Now, remember, the same man was the chief of police and the fire marshal. The same man, that same day, ordered and told a Memphis police, Ed Reddit, R-E-D-D-I-T-T, a black Memphis Police Department detective who was assigned to Dr. King's security detail. He was also told by this same man and removed and was sent home. But they said he had assassination attempt on him, and they wanted to remove him and protect his family. He went home and found out what they were saying. He said he got to the police station, and there was Secret Service in the station, federal agents in the station, and the police chief said he had an attempt on his life. He said, well, if I got an attempt on my life, don't send me home. I want to go back on my post, not where my family can be threatened. And they wouldn't let him. So he was removed and sent home. Jerry Williams, another black Memphis police detective, who always assembled Dr. King's black security team, he was not assigned this particular time. And it was the only time that Dr. King came to Memphis when he wasn't assigned to get a black group of officers to protect King. So basically, to be honest, by the time King got hit at that hotel, he was on his own. Now, let me tell you, it was a touch of Black Panther involved in this. It was an aspiring group called the Invaders. They were a group wanted to be the Black Panthers. They were staying at the Lorraine Motel, and they had met with King, and they was helping him organize the plan to march with the striking garbage workers. But they were infiltrated by a guy named M-A-R-R-E-L-L, Morrell McCullen, who we know now had worked for the Memphis Police Department and later on became a CIA agent. And he was with those brothers from the Invaders, and they got in. He started an argument with some of Dr. King's people, and all the Invaders were escorted off the Lorraine Hotel property and told to leave. And these were brothers who wanted to protect Dr. King's life also. All of this happened the night before he was assassinated. Then, last but not least, there was always 10 police tactical cars that traveled with King. 10. All of them, that whole detail was pulled back the day before by Inspector Evans. So Dr. King was really at 6 o'clock April 4th on his own. And then the same Inspector Sam Evans called the public workers at 7 o'clock a.m. April 5th after King was assassinated and told them to destroy the bushes from around the rooming house, which, you know, that was a crime scene at that time, because then when the FBI and the people get there, it could show James Earl Ray had a clear sight to shoot King. But the bushes, they say, would have stopped him. They were so thick, would have stopped him from killing King, but the FBI and Memphis Police Department hid that evidence for years. And like I say, anybody who Googles what I said earlier, and I said several times in this show, we don't have time to go through all of this, but it gets to the point where even the FBI and CIA had people in position on the editorial boards of influential papers like New York Times and Washington Post to follow their lead on writing articles. And I don't know if a lot of people know, James Earl Ray didn't get proved guilty of killing Dr. King. So much stuff was set up against him, he was going to get the death penalty, so he took a plea. And then when he took his plea back, they wouldn't let him take his plea back. And so much of this, so much of the stuff we're going to talk about tonight comes out in the civil trial, since James Earl Ray never had a real trial. And the civil trial brought all of these conspiracies and the FBI and the federal government and the Army out. And all of this stuff is on record, Brother Sean.
Yes, sir.
So let's do this. Let's just, let me see what time it is now. Let's try this right quick. We're going to see if we can get Brother Charles Steele on to talk about what's going on with the SCLC and the future. And then after that, and our professor's on to talk about who killed Dr. King, and we'll go deeper with some scholars and some people that was with him. Are we all right?
Yes, sir. We're all right. We're rolling.
All right. Let's keep doing what we do here.
Yes, sir.
Give me a second. Brother, you can take over, and I'll go try to find a brother out here in Germany.
All right, sir. Brothers and sisters, that number to call, I know the lines are thick. If you can get through, though, number to call is 646-478-4447. That's 646-478-4447. We're live on Black Power Radio, about to talk to the one, the only, Honorable Charles Steele, live from Germany, head of the SCLC. And as we celebrate the birth anniversary and the legacy of a great freedom fighter, that great honorable one, Martin Luther King Jr. And at some point during the show, I got to play the clip for you all of Dr. King calling for that boycott of Coca-Cola in his last speech, the last speech that he gave, where he talks about he had been to the mountaintop. A lot of y'all don't know that. You know, they asked the question earlier, did Dr. King convert to Islam and this, that, and third? No, but he was getting strong, and he was pushing a more nationalist front and a more black power position, as he had begun to say in private and somewhere in the public, that he had feared he had integrated his people into a burning house. And so he had been basically targeted because he had changed his position. He had been, changed his position to a stronger stance, and he had shifted from even the earlier peaceful position more into a more prominent position of agitation, you know, social agitation. He had been a social agitator all along, and he had now begun to get on the ground dealing with the poor people and the poor workers and, you know, all that good stuff. So we honored Dr. King, and I know that's strange for some of you all. You all say, how can you militant, revolutionary, new Black Panthers, Black Nationalists honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? I mean, that's only proper. That's only proper. We already understand. Everybody don't have the same position. Everybody don't have the same role. So not all of you believe in armed struggle. Not all of you believe in outright self-defense. Not all of you believe in Black nationalism. You know, some of you straight up believe like Dr. King believed. That's not to say that you don't have a place in the liberation effort of our people, as we just heard our national chairman say. You know, we believe that the message of Dr. King, that message of the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., is best served not asking for white folks not to do things, but asking us to be peaceful to one another. The message of Dr. King should be sent to every hood, every ghetto, every bell, every community where our people are, that we must love one another and be peaceful to one another. To prepare to hear from our brother Charles here, I think our chairman is ready. But chairman, are you ready?
Yeah, we're gonna We're going to call him back this time. It's crazy in Germany. I'm going to call him back at 9:30. So what we're going to do now, you go ahead and get Mikasa on, and I'm going to get the professor on, and we're going to keep rolling.
All right, sir. Well, you go ahead. I'm going to call and bring Brother Mikasa on.
Yes, sir. Brother Sean? I think Brother Sean went to get Mikasa, so I'll let him get Mikasa, and we'll keep rolling, and we're going to open the lines in a little bit for the listening audience to ask questions or to give your input on what you think happened, because this is it's a lot of information, and I don't want to go over all of it when we got guests. I want to be fair to the guests who are on the ground with Dr. King and let him they're a profound reminder of history, as we call it, and we are going to keep rolling in the name of a great, honorable Dr. Martin Luther King and keep this going. Brother Sean, you back yet? Okay, we'll just keep going. Everybody who knows Black Talk Radio know we are in for a great night from across the water to some people who in the 60s, we're in the middle of the fire as we recap and remind people that we will never go to sleep until we know what happened to our great leader, Dr. Martin Luther King. Getting him a monument in Washington, naming some streets after him, putting his name on some FBI buildings. I was walking my daughter today and looking at the federal FBI building in Atlanta named after Dr. Martin Luther King, and it sits adjacent of Martin Luther King Boulevard. Remind me of Malcolm X stamps in the United States. They assassinate our leaders, and then the government benefits from it. We're the only people on earth that let that happen to our people and don't question it. Brother Sean, you back?
Yes, sir, I'm back. Give me one more minute. I'm going to keep Brother McCarthy right now.
All right. Okay. We're going to be finding our Black Power attorney in a minute. Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz will be joining us and giving his perspective from Black Lawyers from Justice on this Dr. King holiday, the new Black Panther Party, discussing critical facts about who killed our great leader. And we need to ask that question. If we don't, who will? And if we don't examine it and inspect it, who will? And if we don't look for the details and remind the young people to keep searching for the details, who will? Brother Sean, are you back? So let me go back to the top.
Yes, sir, Brother Corbin. I'm here. You want me to call my address line? Hold on 1 second.
Okay, no problem. I'm going to remind the listeners of where a lot of this information is coming from. When you Google, once again, we'll go to tell you to Google who killed Dr. Martin Luther King, and one of the most recent civil trials of 1999 in Memphis, Tennessee, all the details of key witnesses that was brought back and talked about who killed Dr. King under oath, where the jury found local, state, and federal government agencies guilty of conspiring to assassinate Dr. King. It's all online. All you have to do is Google and look at the piece that's entitled, I want to give the right title, and I got so many notes, just bear with me, because Googling can be a problem if you got a lot of stuff to look for. So let's narrow it down. When you Google who killed Martin Luther King, you'll see how the government killed Martin Luther King Jr. by Carl Gibson. Boy, you read that piece, you'll find it devastating. Brother Sean, you back? Okay, he's still going to find Brother Mikasa Rick, who was on the front line with Dr. King as a young soldier. As you remember, Brother Starkly Carmichael, Brother Cromie Ture, later, him and Mikasa Rick was marching with Dr. King in 1966, I think it was, and for the first time we heard all around Dr. King that slogan, Black Power, and Dr. King went to the media the next day and gave a breakdown of what Black Power means and said we need Black Power. But we had to give Brother Stokely Carmichael and Mikasa Rick and the young soldiers who stayed around Dr. King credit.
All right, Brother Shem, we here.
Brother Mikasa.
Yes, Brother Africa.
The only thing I can say is Black Power.
Black Power, brother.
Brother, you know, we're doing a lot tonight with this Dr. King holiday. We wanted to touch some people, and I know one of my favorite things is when I ride around with you and you go in your briefcase and you bring out that black and white picture of you and Cromie Ture at that time and Dr. King and y'all laughing and marching. And I see so many people get your autograph on that, and then you go to telling the story about that day and where y'all was at and what you was doing. So we just wanted to take time to let you talk to the Black Power listening audience about Dr. King, your relationship with Dr. King, and what he meant to you as a young person back then, young in the movement. And then at the end, we want to talk about who killed our brother. And we're going to bring on one of your friends from Georgia State to join the conversation with us in a minute, but we're going to let you talk right now. We just hung up with Dr. Charles Steele. He out in Germany, and we'll be calling him back later in the program. But you can go ahead now.
Well, my name was Willie Ricks when I was young, and I changed it to Mukasa Dada. Idi Amin gave me that name. I lived in a time when we had to go in back doors, say yes sir to all white people, be beat down, bombed, killed. Anything white people do, we lived under apartheid. So white rule, white domination. And we decided to break that domination early on. It started with, it go way back. It started when the first white man came to Africa and put us in slavery, slave ships, and we went through all that. But then in the 50s, during the time they killed Emmett Till, Rosa Parks and those sit down in the front of the bus and started a bus boycott movement, and that pulled out Martin Luther King and E.J. Nixon, who's a Pullman porter, organized King to take the leadership of that movement. And that night, after Rose Parks sit down on the front of the bus, they had a meeting, and it was called in E.J. Nixon, Mr. Say, called a meeting in Martin Luther King's church without his permission. And then Martin said, well, I have another meeting to go to. He said, no, you have to be here. And that when he came, they appointed him to be the leader of the movement, one, because the white folks didn't have no drunk driving or nothing on him, and that they could hold him or blackmail him or whatever, white mail him and whatever, and that they should want to pick us a leader that's free and independent. And Martin Luther King had just got to town, so they chose Dr. King. That's how he became leader of the Montgomery Improvement Association. And then right after he became leader of the Montgomery Improvement Association, he began to march, and they pumped him up as the leader. And as they pumped him up, there were many people in that movement in many areas of leadership. And they began to throw dynamite and bombs and pull guns and beating and all that kind of stuff. And they even threw a bomb in Dr. King's house and blew his house up and all that kind of thing. And when they blew his house up, Dr. King went down to the pawn shop and bought him a gun. And he was ready to throw down, but because he's going to protect his family. And that makes sense. And then shortly after that, the Montgomery movement, in the height of it, there was a movement in Africa led by Kwame Nkrumah. And Kwame Nkrumah had got the people together under an organization called the Convention of People's Party. And when he got the people together, and he built a movement in Ghana, and him and all the Africans, they organized, because they were under apartheid there too, under the British rule. And they organized a movement in Ghana, and Kwame Nkrumah ran the white man out, took power from him, took over everything, took over the army, took over everything, and built them an African army, built them an African economic system. But when they ran the white man out, who do you think was standing next to Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana in 1957, Martin Luther King. And Martin Luther King predicted that the situation in America would never get that much better and really change, that he predicted that black people, Africans, us, will one day start migrating back to Africa. He predicted, he used a man, a dentist from Hampton, Virginia, as an example. And that speech is still available. They don't like to play it. But he predicted that we will unite with our brothers and sisters in Africa and return home to Africa. And then Martin King, where he was in Africa, he met with Robert Mugabe. He met with all the freedom fighters from all over Africa. And all of them talked about the strategies that they would use to liberate their people. When he talked to Lumumba's forces in the Congo, Patrice Lumumba, and they were colonized by the Belgium, and the Belgium had killed 60, 70, 80 million Africans, and they were still killing them, and they were in slavery. And that Lumumba talked about how they would organize a movement and protest and demonstration, and if they had to use armies and violence, they would do it. And Lumumba and those fought a revolution in the Congo, and Lumumba went through voting and all that, and he was voted the prime minister of the Congo. And then the United States and those went there with the CIA, FBI, the United Nations, same one that went to Libya and killed Gaddafi. They went there and they murdered the prime minister of the Congo. And that hurt every black person in the world. Lumumba became the symbol of and the heart of the freedom fighter. He's a name that everybody prays like we do in Dr. King's name today. But Patrice Lumumba is a name that Dr. King had great love and respect for. And then he met with Lumumba. He met with Mugabe and those in the Congo. He met with who was under British slavery. We met with the Africans in Mozambique, a brother named Michelle, and Mr. Michelle became the president of Mozambique, but he had an organization called FELIMO, and FELIMO, they fought a revolution, and they shot down all the planes, and they went to the houses and to the army bases, and they attacked the white man, they attacked the Belgium, they attacked the white slave masters that had colonized Mozambique, and they attacked them and they fought them for a number of years, 5, 10 years or more. And they fought them, and eventually they whooped them and won independence. And then the United Nations or the CIA or the South African government, they shut down when he was the president, Mr. Samora Machel. He was the president. The United States or the white man, the Europeans, the armies of the oppressor shot down the plane of the president of Mozambique when he was flying in his country or flying somewhere, and they shot his plane down and killed him. And then you had, he met with Augusta Nato, and Augusta Nato was over an organization in Angola called MPLA. And when he met with Angola, Angola was the country had great history that the Portuguese invaded that country. And when the Portuguese invaded that country, they were fought by the Angolan people. And that was a great warrior. She's just like Rose Parks or Ella Baker or Fannie Lou Hamer. But she had an army, a real army. And she didn't just beg and negotiate with the white man. She picked up her arm, and they fought them blow by blow, bullet by bullet, and they defeated the Portuguese. And she fought them for 41 years trying to keep them from killing us and stealing us and bringing us over here from Africa on those slave ships. And that the Africans fought to keep us from coming over here, and thousands died in defense of us not getting on those slave ships. But eventually they got us on the slave ship, and that's why most of us in this country, a large number of us, in the Western Hemisphere came from Angola. A lot of slave ships left Angola coming here. And then we look at, so those are, that's a relationship he had, and they eventually defeated the Portuguese imperialism. And mind you, the Portuguese imperialist slave white people that had us in slavery in Angola, they were getting their guns and bombs and support from the United States, from the United States. The United States helped them kill thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of African people in Angola. And then after Angola, that revolution was won in Angola, Dr. King also had supported Nelson Mandela and those in Southern Africa. He met with some of them. I think a great leader named Robert Sobukwe was in Ghana with Kwame Nkrumah, and they told Martin Luther King that they could not use nonviolence. It wasn't working down in South Africa, and they would have to pick up guns, and they would have to fight blow by blow. And that's why Nelson Mandela, when he was put in prison, he was put in prison for being part of an army, and his job was to blow up different government and different European buildings to run the white men, to scare them so bad that they would run out of South Africa. But Mandela was put in jail, and they put thousands and thousands of black people in Robben Island, where the Robben Island in South Africa was so bad, they would bury the South Africans in the ground all the way up to their neck and had just the head sticking out, and they would shoot the head, or they would put syrup on their head and watch the ants just come crawl over them and eat them up like that. And they would stand over them and piss on their head and whatever. But they tortured the people in Robben Island, and Mandela was tortured. And when they tortured Mandela knows so badly, I think Mandela succeeded, and they got him and told him that he had to negotiate with them and make a deal with them where they could keep the diamonds, keep the gold, keep the oil, keep the silver, and that he had to agree that he would tell the people that he was going to forgive the white people for what all they have done to us and let them keep everything that they stole and let them stay rich and let the black people stay poor in South Africa. And that's an agreement I'm sure that many of us would not agree with. And then you had Angola, who fought that revolution, South Africa, who Martin Luther King in 1967 talked about taking the movement to South Africa and joining in with the PAC and Steve Biko, who they crushed his head when he was in prison, murdered him. But he was talking about going there and fighting with the people inside of South Africa against white domination and against imperialism. And then we had another group called in Southwest Africa's People's Organization, SWAPO, in Namibia. And they were fighting there. And that Martin King also met with Joseph something, I forgot his name, but he was leader of an organization called SWAPO. He met with them and talked about uniting with SWAPO and uniting our movement with them and help liberating Southern Africa. But all this was done, Kwame Nkrumah put them all in a room together. And Martin King told him that he was using nonviolence down in Montgomery, and all the other leaders in Africa told him that they were using guns and guerrilla warfare and that nonviolence wouldn't work there, and they thought nonviolence was crazy and a joke. And Martin Luther King sort of frowned a little bit at them having an army to fight, but he could understand that they were fighting for their liberation, and one was using nonviolent tactics and one was using violent tactics, but they were all fighting against the same enemy. And then so you got SWAPO all down in Southern Africa, and then you had another leader that he met with in Guinea-Bissau whose name was Amakar Kabra. And his slogan was, a luta continua, the struggle continues. A luta continua, they were colonized by the Portuguese. So when they were fighting and shooting down the planes and using guerrilla warfare and with the army, their slogan was, a lutte continue, pow, 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 a lutte continue, pow, 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 pow. And they were fighting against Portuguese imperialism. And then you had Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, where a white man named Cecil Rhodes from Britain had went there and killed over 60 million Africans and put them in slavery. And they had a guerrilla warfare, and they fought down there, and they fought, and they fought, and they fought, and they defeated the white man, the British, and they didn't defeat him until after Martin Luther King was dead, but they were fighting even back then. And just like they put Dr. King in jail in Birmingham, they put all them African leaders in jail too, like Robert Mugabe stayed in jail 11 years, and then he came out and became president. And then you had Lumumba, who they tortured and killed and murdered and put in jail and did everything they could to him. But Lumumba was a great, great warrior, and we have to just see that. So I'm saying this to say that even we celebrate or we pray and we mad as hell over the death of Dr. King, we're not celebrating. We're mourning the death of Dr. King today, and these folks are celebrating. They're crazy as hell. We ain't celebrating. We mad as hell. And that when the United States has went around the world for the last 50 years, I know, and assassinated every leader, just like they shot Dr. King in the mouth, they have went around the world and assassinated every leader. And someplace they went and took armies and just attacked the president's house at night, like they did Allende over in Chile. They just attacked him and killed thousands and thousands of people and overthrew the government and put a murdering dictator in power who again killed thousands of people with the help of the United States. Yes, sir.
You have gave us a global and an international view of Dr. King that many of these listeners, and we're talking about nationalists, pan-Africanists, revolutionaries, and young people who Google and Facebook us, and I'm telling you, you put it down in 20 minutes like it hadn't been put down on an international basis. People will think the only time Dr. King left this country is to go get a Nobel Peace Prize. But I want you to hold that international and global side. That's the PhD. I want to go back to the bachelor's and the master's, but we're going to have you on because we don't pick up Charles Steele until 9:45, and we're going to pick up Professor Umjama. We've got 10 minutes on him. So what I want to do for our younger listening audience is I want to talk about that picture again. How old were you when you took the picture with King that I got on my wall that I'm looking at right now?
Okay, well, I got with a group called SNCC, S-N-C-C, when I was about 18 years old, and immediately I started marching and demonstrating and spending a lot of time around Dr. King. We was in the Albany movement together where they bombed our churches, like in Sarasota, Georgia. They run down the church that we used to meet in Dawson, Georgia. They used to throw dynamite on our porch for trying to register people to vote. They put us in jail, prison. They put Martin Luther King and us in state prison here in Georgia, Reidsville. And so I was able to spend a lot of time with Dr. King in the Albany movement and in Lee County, Dawson, and other places, and also in Selma, Alabama, when SNCC had a movement there, and then we called Dr. King in. He came there, and I was able to be on many programs and down there speaking next to Dr. King, before him, after him, sitting next to him on many stages, and then marching up and down the street, facing dogs, bombs, police, and all that.
Who was the president of SNCC then? Was it Cromie Ture?
John Lewis was chairman of SNCC up until 1966. And the time I spent with Dr. King prior to 66 in Montgomery, Alabama, where we protested, demonstrated, went up against the system. And then that when we went into Alabama, we started to, after they killed Viola Luzzo, Jimmy Reed, Jimmy Lee Jackson, and some others, we went into Lowndes County, Alabama. SNCC said that it's just too dangerous and crazy to face these white folks without guns. So we went in Lowndes County, Alabama to start arresting people to vote. We picked up guns and started defending ourselves, and we had no choice but to do that. And then Dr. King came to Lowndes County, and we told him we didn't need him there because we could handle that, and we were going to handle it with guns. But that's where the Black Panther Party started. But then right after the Lowndes County Black Panther Party started, James Meredith got shot, and we went to Memphis and said we're going to take up this march that he's trying to march to tell our people, black people, not to have fear, and he was going to walk 250 miles.
And history note, that march was named the March for No Fear.
The March Against Fear.
Right.
The March Against Fear. But when we got on there, we changed it, and we got on there, and we started saying black power, black power, black power, black power, black power, and black power made the march more militant, and we started standing up and talking about fighting and talking about revolution, talking about uniting, and it became a black power march. And when it became a black power march, every night when we marched so far, and then at night we would have rallies. And every night and sometime during the day, we would have rallies, and we would all be speaking on the back of trucks. And the speeches that Dr. King and myself would make on the back of that truck, talking to the people of Mississippi at that time, you never hear them. They don't play them because they don't want you to hear the militant Dr. King and what Dr. King was saying when he wasn't in the pulpit. I was listening to sermons today. They playing the stuff where he was in church, talking to church kinds of lectures. But when he was on the back of the truck and we was out there talking revolution and black power, he was a whole another man and more militant. And that so the pictures that you saw is a picture that was taken when we walked 240 or 250 miles from Memphis to Jackson, Mississippi, where they threw dynamite, bombs, and they bombed us, they beat us, they jailed us, and Dr. King got hurt, Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, he got hurt, and hundreds of other people were hurt because they bombed us, they dropped that tear gas on us. Martin King and myself, and we were standing on top of a big old truck making a speech to thousands of people, and while we was on the truck, they bombed, they just started throwing bombs at us, and Dr. King fell off the truck, got hurt, and his gas hurt him so bad, he was crawling out there. You couldn't hardly see nobody, and he was crawling, and I picked him up, and I was carrying him and Stokely, matter of fact. And that, so I was in many battles with King, and then right around April, of the year before they killed him, in February the 8th, during that time, Dr. King told me one day, said, if any time you need some clothes, he should call me Willie. Anytime you need some clothes, I got plenty of clothes, and people just give them to me all the time. Say, if you want some, just come by the house and get them. One night I went over there, and I was getting some clothes, and I changed clothes in his bedroom, and me and him was talking. I turned to Martin, and I said, of course, Stokely said it to me, Kwame Ture said it to me, that Martin, after Martin, he says, Martin is trying. Martin is gripping black power. Martin is getting stronger toward us. He's standing with us. And that, he said, they have to get him. And they have to kill him. And I told Martin, I turned to Martin in his bedroom. I was putting my clothes on right there. I said, Martin, they have to kill you. He said, who is they? I said, they, you know who they are. But anyway, I told him that, and that was February the 7th. And the reason I knew it was February the 7th, because the very next day was the Orangeburg Massacre, where students from South Carolina State went down to the White Bowling Alley. And when they went down to the White Bowling Alley, the National Guard and the police and the white people came on that campus, and they started shooting at them students, and they shot 6 to 8 children in the back and killed 4. It was called the Orangeburg Massacre. That's why I remember the date. And then I just spent a lot of time with Dr. King on programs and marching and demonstration eating lunch and dinners
This. You brought up a good point, because a lot of us, the first time, us who was kids and young, first time we got to see the Memphis to Jackson march was on Eyes on the Prize, and that's when we saw you and Stokely and all of that go down. It was filmed, of course. But you told me something in private a couple of times. You said when Dr. King got ready to go to Memphis on that April month, he told you not to go.
They told me to go with him.
Oh, he told you to go.
He asked me would I go. I ate lunch with him the day
right.
he left for Memphis. He left the day before he died. And at 10 o'clock in the morning at Pascal's restaurant, I walked in there and Maury was sitting there. And I went over, we sit down and talk. He bought my breakfast, we sit and talk. And he asked me to come go to Memphis with him. And the reason he wanted me to go to Memphis, because his march was being undermined, and it was undermined by two different segments, the Black Power element who just go stand up to the police and fight back, and then the FBI who was doing things to promote disorder was setting Martin Luther King up to kill him. And the FBI set Martin Luther King up to kill him in Memphis, Tennessee. And we knew that they were trying to kill Martin, and we could see it coming because so many of us were being killed and shot down in gun barrels. Now, remember, during that time, from 67 all through 68, all through King Death and past King Death, all these cities were burning down. Detroit knew. At one time, it was probably 100 cities on fire in this country at the same time. They had to bring soldiers from Vietnam and land them in the cities and start shooting and fighting black people and shooting black children down in the streets right here in the United States. That's how the order was. And that's when they got so scared and started passing all these bills and saying they were going to integrate the schools. And anybody got federal money had to hire black people. All the white schools had to have black people in there and in order to get federal money, because they were scared we were going to burn these cities down. And then when they start losing control like that, shortly after then, we could just see the cities burn. They were shooting black people by the thousands, killing the little Panther people, and every day just shooting after shooting after shooting. And we could see them coming at King because they were scared of King, because King still had respect from the masses, and that the FBI, the United States government, said that Marcus Garvey was the most dangerous man because his ability to organize and his ability to unite black people all over the world, he was dangerous, and they called Marcus Garvey a black messiah. And Hoover, the FBI head, said America cannot afford another black messiah, and they had to prevent Carmichael from becoming a black messiah by undermining him. They had to permit H.R.A.P. Brown from becoming a black messiah by undermining him, putting him in jail and doing what they did to him. And they had to stop Dr. King. They said Dr. King had the ability, if he began to preach nationalism and say the things that Marcus Garvey and W.B. Du Bois and Paul Robeson were saying, he would be the world's strongest black leader, and he would be able to galvanize black people all over the world to stand up against white domination and white racism and imperialism all over the world. And the FBI said, we got to kill him, and that's why they made a decision to kill him in Memphis, Tennessee.
Well, what we're going to do now, before hopefully we can go over tonight again, Sean, because of the time in Germany with Charles Steele, we'll get the professor on, but I want the listening audience to be able to talk to our Black Power ambassador. Last time he was on, we didn't get to do it, so if we got some callers that want to ask our great Baba Mikasa Rick any questions after they didn't heard him do a global and international king, a local king, a king that would bring a young person like Mikasa Rick to his house and clothe him, and basically he ate breakfast with Dr. King before he got on that plane to Memphis. And I know some young people or some of our people have questions. So, Sean and yourself, let's just do that for the next 15 minutes, and then we'll go to our next invited guest.
Okay, yes, sir. And I'm going to set up so we can go afterwards past 10 o'clock. So past 10 o'clock, we'll be able to call right back in and hopefully come right back to the show. But let's go to the call line here. Your area code here is 502-939, 502-939. You're on Black Power Radio with our guest, the great Casa Rix Dada. Talk to us, Black Power. Your question, your comment. Welcome to the show. Area code 505-939. You got a question or comment? Might just be listening lines of parents. Keep moving here. Your area code is 347-355. 347-355. You're on live with Black Power Radio and our guest, Brother Mukasa Rix Dada. Go ahead with your question and comment. Welcome, Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power African.
How you doing?
Wow.
Hey, brother.
All is well. I'm Al Shaquan.
Good. You have a question?
Yeah. It was a lot of things I heard tonight over the radio that I didn't even know about, like as far as like Martin Luther King's brother being found in the pool and everything, and
A.D. King.
And I wanna know how you all gathered that information.
How we get the information?
Yes.
But he was found dead in the pool. The next morning after he was found dead in the pool. That's how we knew it, and we knew the FBI.
Yes, a lot of people don't know about
our
that.
Leaders.
Say
again?
A lot of people don't know.
Oh, yeah, but, the record and news and information would tell you that Martin Luther King's brother was found dead in the swimming pool.
Yes.
Hey, Mikasa, when I did research on that, did research on his wife, they said not only he was found dead in the pool, but he had no water in his lungs, which proved he didn't die in the pool. He was brought to
the
pool.
That the FBI was, they were killing a whole bunch of us, was found dead and came up missing during that time. So we know that the FBI killed our leaders, and they killed them all over the world, and they're still killing them, just like they killed Gaddafi. They're trying to starve people in Zimbabwe to death. They tried to kill Castro 100 times or more. They coup d'etat the government, Idi Amin, and they're dropping bombs all over the world. Any leader that speak up for our people and try to unite us, the United States government has consistently killed them.
Because he wanted to unite us.
They want to unite. We got to unite because Africa is our land, and that if we're going to ever be free, we got to have our own country, our own army, our own Navy, our own Air Force. We got to print our own money and have our own banks. That's what Muammar Gaddafi was trying to do in Libya. That's why they killed Gaddafi in Libya. Yes, sir. So
they want us to be separated.
And we'll never be free until we have complete control of Africa and control our own destiny.
Sure, indeed. You're right about that. They don't want us to have any control of anything because then they won't have no power over anything. They don't want that yet.
That's why the Chinese, when they took China back, they became independent and free. Their destiny is in their hand because they got all kind of weapons, guns, and they got technology enough to develop and help and make things for their own people and solve the problems and the social problems and the economic problems that their people face every day.
True,
so, brother, thank you for your question.
Thank you.
All right.
Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power. Thank you so much for your question. And you can just face. We'll go to the next caller here. The area code is 770-334, 770-334. You're on live Black Power Radio, Brother Mukasa Rix Dada. Come on in with your question, comment, get involved. Black.
Yes, sir. Black Power, Black Power. My national
chief
John Kwali, National Challenge Hashim, and my honorable elder, Baba Mukasa Rix, sir. First off, Baba Mukasa, I want to thank you, comrade, for not only giving us a chronological analysis of Dr. King's involvement internationally, but addressing some of the things that have pleasantly and conveniently been swept under the rug. I really don't have a question because you answered the question I was writing down while you were talking, comrade, and I once again give you thanks for that. But I just wanted to add to your analysis because one of the things that I thought was very interesting about the timeline of Dr. King's evolution of consciousness during the last 2 years of his life, I think it should be pointed out to the people, and maybe you could address this since you were there and you could bear witness to it. He started out using nonviolence as he never said this was the sole means to the freedom of black people in America. He said it was a tactic, but we all know during the course of repression, the spiraling building of consciousness, you evolve to another level. It is my analysis through reading all the books of the FBI files of Dr. King and reading his personal memoirs, he started looking at the black situation and using the nonviolent protest as an economic strangulation, because the petty bourgeoisie were the ones that were enforcing the black code of conduct at that time, which is the reason why, like you pointed out, Brother Baba Wakasa, how they would show us the pulpit, Dr. King, but they never showed us the black power turned all the way up to the max, Dr. King, that you just described. I'm sure a lot of people on this phone could never even conceptualize Dr. Martin Luther King saying black power, but that proves the evolution of his consciousness. So it is my opinion as a revolutionary, brother, and I want you to expound on that for a little bit, that the joint venture of him economically joining the civil rights head and moving the youth towards that course of action, which is always to be exhausted. We don't just jump to armed struggle. We exhaust all means of rebellion until we can no longer do all of those. Then we do what? Peace when possible, war when necessary. But the main leaders that he went to meet with and strategize with were not just successful revolutions, ongoing revolutions, but in the middle of stopping the imperialist thrust of America. I believe that Brother Conrad Martin Luther King Jr. was killed in direct correlation to the growth, development, and maturity final phase of fascism in America, and they knew that once he finally cast off, which he said in that infamous Jet magazine interview, where he said, you know what, I truly believe I have led my people down the wrong path. Integration may have not been the best move for us. I believe I have led my people into a burning down house. So he not only knew that integration was their tactic, once he cut the strings from the black bourgeoisie in control of all of his organizing efforts here, he had to reach out to the motherland. And once we saw him hook up with the most vocal and the known figurehead of black armed revolutionary struggle at that time, which was our brother El-Hajj Malik Shabazz, Brother Malcolm X, I think Dr. Martin Luther King threw a severe monkey wrench into the counterintelligence campaign to control the black Messiah.
Because let me try to speak to some of the things that you said.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Please.
Thank
you,
for your question also. Is that Dr. King was, during Dr. King's time, there was an organization called SNCC, S-N-C-C, that was fighting side by side with that movement, and it was SNCC that led the movement, and we led Dr. King into many, many projects. And we led Dr. King into black power. We led Dr. King into more of a militant kind of atmosphere. And when the city started burning down, now the revolution of the movement is in the hands of the people. And the people jumped to be so militant that Dr. King now have to try to keep up with them. And that the people in the movement, we were educating Dr. King and pushing him as we go. So we have to understand that Dr. King was being influenced by the militant movement, SNCC, the Black Power Movement, the rebellions in the city, the anti-war movement, the anti-imperialist movement, and revolutions that was happening all over the world. That's why Dr. King called for, he said that America was the greatest terrorist nation in the world. He was anti-imperialist, and he also called for a redistribution of the wealth, which means he was endorsing socialism and communism, and that he was calling for revolution. He knew that in order for there to be a change, there had to be a revolution, and he was growing. All of us started out nonviolent. I was nonviolent. I'm still there, as a matter of fact. Even though, I used my rifle, and I've used it and burned down cities and whatever. But I go back to nonviolence all the time. And that so nonviolence, just attack it, just use it and as long as you can, but when you have to, you organize your guerrilla army, and I supported all the guerrilla army. I even went and joined many of them and helped them fight. But So Dr. King was influenced by revolution all over the world, and he was influenced by the movement and the cities and the revolution that was taking place right here in the United States. So thank you for your question, sister.
Yes, sir, brother. Once again, I want to thank you, brother, for your long, steadfast, and consistent dedication to the liberation of our people and having the ability to provide us with that critical history. Because speaking from my generation, being born in 85, we had a split between Dr. King and Malcolm X.
The enemy tried to play up the split. But we have to just talk about what we agree on, and we all agree that the United States was the dirtiest, lowest, imperialist power on the face of the earth that has to be brought down.
Yes, sir.
We all agree on that. And the enemy always want to talk about what we disagree with, but we come to talk about on what we agree with and our similarities, not our dissimilarities.
Exactly. And that's the best way that we can honor Dr. Martin Luther King today is by clarifying some of the myths being handed down by the ruling elite, the same fascist regimes that helped assist in his assassination and the people that tried to control him in the first place. So that was my statement, brothers. I'm
thank you, sister. Black Power.
Black Power Radio, sir. Black Power. Salute. Black Power.
Black Power. Black Power. All right. Got another caller here. Eric Cole, 347. 347-372, you're on live. This is Black Power Radio. They're talking to our brother, comrade, Soldier Warren, Elder Soldier, with the Baba Mukasa Ricks. Come on with it. 347-372, you're on live. Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power African, how you doing?
Hi, my name is Tawana Benjamin. I'm the chief of staff of the local chapter for Brooklyn, Black Power.
Well, Black Power, my African queen.
I'm calling because I observed how the news communicates with Nzinga, and I wanted to know if you guys would like for me to be the mouthpiece. I'm a forensic psychology major at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and I got my bachelor's in humanities and justice with a minor in history. And I'm not playing with this government. I already got my copyright thesis statement called, "Who Are You to Judge?" But here comes the judge reconstructing the New York family court system, exposing the Illuminati and everything, and they ain't touch me. I want to say that you guys are wonderful black gentlemen, and you need to keep up the good work, Black Power. I appreciate you on this day exemplifying the information necessary for research or what have you, and I look forward to being of support the more. God bless you all.
Thank you. That's a very powerful statement. And we want everybody got to join organization, and you got to form one, join the Panther, join any kind of organization. But if you can't do it by yourself, you got to be part of an organization where you act on behalf of a group and not always act on behalf of yourself. Organization.
Dr. Baba Mukasa, I was telling the audience last week that I was one of the fortunate ones, not as fortunate as you, but a couple of times I got to walk in the same elevator, in the same hotel lobby, and on the same stage as our great brother, Cromie Ture. And
yeah, you invited him to Texas one time.
Him and brother H. Ralph Brown. And one of the things I told him, it was nothing like when you was working with him to call his phone and it say, "Ready for the revolution." He going to tell me, I said, "Brother, I'm young. What do I need to be doing?" He said, "Brother, organize, organize, organize."
Yeah, I mean, all of us got to be in an organization.
Because of this,
I mean, we can talk about these white folks and be mad and talk this stuff, but we ain't in no organization. We ain't happy.
You know, this is the thing we're dealing with. I was watching I listened to the audience. I just letting you know we're going to go late today because we got a lot of other people going to come on. We're just going to let them do what Baba Mukasa's doing, and everybody, you're going to get to ask any question you want. We're not going to hog this, but we just want to say that this is a crossroad and a crisis. And I was excited at watching the King celebration at his church this morning, and I was disappointed. I was excited and happy about certain things, but that's all of us. I was excited that they let the young brother who went to the state capitol in Tallahassee, Florida, and he did something that a Mukasa Rick would do and a Malik Zulu Shabazz did at Howard and Dr. Collett would do. He shut down his group. They organized and they shut down that capital until the governor of Florida would come talk to them. And I was glad that they let that young man come up and speak strong. And I was glad to see Dr. King's daughter start her lecture off with our brother KJ out there in Valdosta from that pulpit like her father would have did. And you said something so profound about 4 weeks ago when we had you on. You said you observing the 50-year anniversary of Dr. King in Washington, D.C., and listening to the different speeches, that if Dr. King was living, he would have been too radical to speak at his own 50-year anniversary. Speak on that.
Well, the people called me from Milwaukee and asked me to come speak and for Martin Luther King's celebration, and then they called me back and said, no, I can't speak because I was too militant. And I'm saying that all these right-wing and government and people that's sitting up there, these white folks and work for these white folks and on television and these white folks control their destiny, they saying basically what the white man wants them to say, and they're scared of the real position that Dr. King took. Like if Dr. King was living, Dr. King lived, he spoke out against the war in Vietnam and called the United States a warmonger and a great terrorist nation. You don't hear these people speaking out against the United States dropping bombs and killing Gaddafi in Libya. You don't hear them speaking out against the bombs they're dropping in Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan and in the Sudan and in, Somalia and the crimes they committed in the Congo and Central African Republic and Mali.
And you don't want to, and you know, Mikasa, what pisses me off is we have intel. We're not ignorant. We got the same technology they got. We know that ex-President Clinton was in them tents in Libya begging Gaddafi to give money to Hillary Clinton. And on the other side of that tent was the Obama camp begging him to support Obama. And he chose to support Obama. So they act like when we mention Gaddafi, we so far off, we so far out of reach, we so in space, we so terroristic.
Everybody knows that Gaddafi was a great man in the United States. They convinced Gaddafi to give up his nuclear bomb. When he gave up them nuclear bombs, that's when they went in there and killed him. But Gaddafi was trying to build the United States of Africa. He was building an African bank where black people have their own bank, and he was printing African money. Our money would have bagged up by pure gold, and it would have been the richest money in the world. And the Europeans were scared of that because it would mess up theirs and make their money weak. And that they went in there and he would unite Africa, and they were still having to pay for the resources, the diamond, the gold, the oil, the silver, the copper, the pearl, that they steal out of Africa every day. So they went there and killed them. And then all them old weak leaders, from the government leaders here to the preachers and all of them, they murdered tens of thousands of people in Libya and the United States and all these so-called black leaders in the United States, all these people at the King Center and the people at this program today. They didn't say one word about the United States murdering Gaddafi. They don't say one word about the embargo they got on Zimbabwe. They don't say about one word about the military blockade that they have on Cuba, where they're trying to starve people to death, keep from getting aspirins and medicine where their children will die. They don't say one word against the United States and what they're doing to Haiti and the people down there eating mud biscuits and still suffering more now than they did before. And the United States is invading Haiti over and over again to make sure that they suffer because they were the first black people to gain independence and freedom. So when we
I was saying before you came on, Brother Mikasa, Baba Mikasa, that in 1971, of course, like always, after Dr. Martin Luther King had made his spiritual transition and was killed by these people, they gave him a Grammy for his album, which was entitled Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam. He did that album, he recorded that album at Riverside Church in New York City, April 30th, 1967. But some 4 or 5 years after he was dead and gone, they gave him awards for opposing Vietnam, and we know that led with these wars strictly for corporations' gain. That led to his assassination. But one of the things I wanted to, we got to get back to some callers. We're going to play at the top of the hour.
Get every call.
We're going to get them all, but at the top of the hour, we're going to play some of his last speech where we know King was talking about in 1967, we spent $30 billion, and we was, as black people, we were the fifth richest nation in the world, and we're going to deal with that after the 10 o'clock hour. But, Sean, we can go back to some calls.
Yeah, yeah, get them and talk. Tell them to talk fast, and we get all the calls quick, fast, and hurry. Make a question and move on.
That's the Baba.
Yes, sir, Bob. And I do want to remind you all that at the 10 o'clock hour, what we'll do is the line will click off, and what you do is call back in at this number. We'll be right back on for the Overdrive show of Black Power Radio. Next call here is area code 347-496, 347-496. You're on live Black Power Radio with our brother, soldier, comrade, Brother Mukasa Rick Dotter. Go right ahead with your question and comment, Black Power.
Good evening, brothers. This is Dashaun Parade, your Black World. Brother Mukasa, how have you been?
I'm fine, Brother Africa. How you doing?
Fine. Dear Brother, Pennell Joseph, I have a question. Dr. Pennell Joseph argues in his book, Bright Nights, Dark Days, that Dr. King and Brother Kwame Ture would have been in support of President Obama. Do you agree with that?
Hell no. Kwame Ture don't believe in it. Kwame Ture hate the Democrats, hate the Republicans, hate America. And he hate imperialism, hate colonialism. Obama is a pig, a murderer, and an agent of imperialism. He's undermining Africa. He's undermining liberation movements all over the world. And he's a right-wing United States imperialist agent. And Kwame Ture would never support imperialist agents. And Martin Luther King, you didn't hear about him voting for none of them devils. So, no, we ain't no Democrats, we ain't no Republicans, and we'll never go along with the United States. Hell no. That's dumb.
Thank you for your comment there, brothers. Have a good night.
Yeah. No, we don't support no America. We don't support the United States. We don't support the Democrats. We don't support no. Kwame Ture want to see America burn, want to see the destruction of imperialism, destruction of the capitalistic system, and that's what he's working for. He's working for the United States of Africa. Pan-Africanism. So
right.
He said that he's dead wrong.
Yes, that's right. Like a true general and true revolutionary. Next caller here, area code 504-432-504-432. You're on live. Pastor Rick Dotter, your question, your comment. We're in the heat of it now. Go right ahead, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power. Brother Pastor Rick, how you doing?
Fine, Brother African Revolution continues.
Okay. Look, I want to ask you a quick question. I heard you were saying about the nonviolence as a strategy. Now, how do you feel about the guy in India?
Gandhi.
What's the Gandhi? Mahatma Gandhi.
Gandhi was he used some nonviolence, but he was the weakest leader they had because he allowed the British to divide the country into Pakistan, Bangladesh, and probably another little two or three countries. And then you had another leader there called Netaji. And Netaji was the real leader, and he got guns from Mussolini, and he was ready to fight the British in imperialism, and that he's very powerful, and that they chose to go with Gandhi and isolate Netaji. And that Gandhi was a weaker leader, and that's why it stayed friendly and stayed a capitalist system in relationship to Britain. But Gandhi also belonged to the caste system where black people get jail. So Gandhi, and he learned nonviolence from South Africa. When he saw black people marching, demonstrating in South Africa, and without guns and stuff, he took those demonstrations back to India. But that movement that he learned from was in South Africa. So our movement don't come from no Gandhi. Our movement come from Africa. And that Martin King used nonviolence as a, I guess he got locked into it and carried it too far. Well, SNCC used nonviolence. My organization used nonviolence. And then when things got hot, we picked up our guns and then gas bombs and burnt down these cities and joined every movement in the world that was fighting against the United States imperialism.
Okay. Because then they said Gandhi was a known racist.
Well, he belonged to the caste system in India. India got one of the most racist caste systems in the world. The dark-skinned people in India catch pure hell.
Okay. All right. Nice talking to you, brother. I'm glad to hear from somebody who
Thank you. Join our organization,
with,
and and teaching, educating people, y'all come together and talk about what's going on in the world and talk about revolution, listen to people like Kwame Ture, Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey is the one we really need to be celebrating like this, because Marcus Garvey really built the movement, and that's what we need. All need to learn from.
Okay. Black power, brother.
Black power, Pan-Africanism.
All right. No doubt about it. And this is a 1 minute reminder for all of you who are online, who are with Brother Charles Steele, and we'll hear from Attorney Malik Alushabaz. We'll hear from Brother Akinyele Yemoja. When this line goes dead by 90 seconds, what you do is you call right back in at 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447, as we continue this discussion on Did the FBI Kill Martin Luther King Jr.? We're all live now with Brother Mukasa, Ricks, Donna. We'll start with one more call in here. Area code 347-406-347-406. You're on live. Black Power Radio. Your question, your comment, please. Welcome, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power. This is Brother Supreme from
New York.
Hey, brother. If we get disconnected, call right back in, Brother Supreme.
Yes, I will. Yes, I will indeed. I'm just enjoying this. Man, this is deep. This is powerful. I mean, I didn't know, you know, Dr. King did so much. You know, it was like you don't hear so much about Dr. King. I mean, you know, especially in school, they teach you a little bit about him. So I'm just absorbing all this information that's being given out today. This is powerful. Hello.
Yes, I'm here. But I want to tell you this. Marcus Garvey did much more.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so red, black, and green.
Look at Marcus Garvey. King was, and Malcolm did a lot, and Paul Robeson, and Du Bois, and Kwame Nkrumah, and Sekou Toure. Those are the men you need to look at, men like Fidel Castro. You need to look at these men, and the reason they teach you in